Prison Pipeline presents a unique perspective of the criminal justice system, addressing the root causes of crime and broadening understanding of the institution of incarceration.
Baby, you understand me now. If sometimes you see that I'm mad, don't you know no one alive can always be an angel?
Good evening. Welcome to Prison Pipeline on KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM. I'm Amy Johnson. Tonight, I'm airing a Mother's Day special. It's a mother-daughter interview about the effects of incarceration. My brother has been incarcerated in New York State for over 7 years. The experience has been challenging for my family, and it is what led me to become a host on Prison Pipeline. The impact of incarceration on family members is a topic that's close to my heart. So for Mother's Day, I invited my mother to join me to discuss the impact of my brother's incarceration. We're hopeful that my brother will be granted early release this fall, so this might be the last chance we'll be able to speak together before this incarceration is past tense. For context, my family is a white middle-class family from a suburb of New York City, and my brother is the first family member to go to prison. So, Mom, what has it been like for you to have a son in prison?
It's been a roller coaster. You know, in the very beginning, you know, when we first heard about what he did, from a feeling of shock and how can this be my child doing this, and then becoming involved in helping him through this and the whole legal system and sitting and listening to evidence, I began to learn that what he was charged with didn't really match what he actually did, and he was really being, I don't know if the right word is railroaded, but he really was being treated unfairly by our criminal justice system. I don't even know what to say about it. I just learned that the criminal justice system is not fair. It doesn't do what I think it was intended to do and what I always had believed it did. And I always believed that if somebody was in jail, they were in jail because they did something wrong and they needed to serve their time. I have come to learn that there's more to the story than just that. You know, I've learned to have a lot more compassion for people. It's changed me in terms of being, I hope, less judgmental and a little more opened and willing to listen and to hear, not just let people talk and not really take in what they're saying. In the beginning, it was, is he going to be okay? Is he going to be safe where he is? And, you know, we have always tried to be there to visit, to make sure that he knows that he has family that cares about him, to keep that connection there. I felt that that was very, very important. From the beginning, we would go and visit, you know, twice a week, drive 2 hours each way to visit. Then when he was moved way upstate, we would go as often as we could. It's over a five-hour drive. But in the beginning, I was going very frequently because I was afraid for him. I didn't know what it would be like and all the stories that you hear about terrible things happening to incarcerated inmates. And I'm like, I don't want that to happen to my son. Is he okay? He's my baby. He's not a baby, but he's still my baby. So for my peace of mind, I had to do a lot of visiting over probably a three-month period. I probably visited like every week or every other weekend. And if other people couldn't go, I would go anyway just because I had to go and see him and make sure he was okay. And as I became more comfortable and confident that he was okay and he was all right in handling where he was, we moved back the number of times that we visited, and it became more closer to like once a month or so, or every 3 weeks. In the beginning, We tried very, very hard to make sure that we were there for Thanksgiving, for Christmas. I try to get there as close as I can to his birthday. So we're there for his birthday. Sometimes we're there for New Year's as well. This year for the first time, and that was hard for me not being there at Christmas for him because I really wanted to be there. But the way Christmas fell, it fell like in the middle of the week. And because Daddy works out of the country, it's kind of hard to get family and everyone together to do that at that time of year.
Yeah. And we have other siblings, so they would also try to go for the holidays.
Yeah.
So what have been the most challenging aspects for you of having an incarcerated son?
I would say figuring out all the rules and regulations for visiting at each one of the prisons, because they change, what you can and you cannot bring, what you can wear, what's acceptable to wear. Can you bring a package? Does it have to be something sent from a vendor? If things are allowed to be brought in, figuring out what meets the requirements. Many times you'll get something and you think that it meets all the requirements, you know, and I'd bring it and they'd say, well, it meets everything except that it's in a glass container. You can't have a glass container.
Yeah, I think there was a belt one time that it was like
issue.
It needed
it
to be
2 inches and it has to
the
be
buckle.
Square. It can't be rounded, the buckle on it, and it can. Or the buckle, I think, could be maybe 2 1/4 or 2 1/2, but the belt itself could only be 2 inches, and it has to be riveted. It can't be anything that can come apart. I brought a couple of different, and it has to be leather. It can't be made of any other material. It must be leather. You know, so sometimes you just go through and you'd bring it, and they'd go like, nope, doesn't meet the regulations. Nope, doesn't meet the regulations. You know, he's in a facility where he can cook now, so I was trying to bring him a pot. And he's like, well, the pot's the right size, and it's okay, he can have it, except the handle must be riveted. It can't be a handle that's screwed on. And I'm thinking, the handle to me looked like it was a much more secure handle that wasn't going to come off, but what do I know? So it's kind of that thing. The other one that was real interesting was trying to get a thermos bottle. You would take your food in. They have all different kinds of regulations, and I found one that fit all the regulations, but it was too large. And then they'd be like, no, you can't have it because it's double wall. No, you can't have it because it comes apart. No, you can't. And I think they just like to sometimes say, these are lists of things that you can have, and then put such restrictions on it that it becomes almost impossible to find the item that actually meets the criteria that allows it to come in. That was challenging to me. And we've journeyed through this from different prisons. From the first prison he was in, he seemed to be really safe and feel safe. And then he got in trouble and he was in the box. And so when he had that sentence for 2 months, we tried to go every single weekend because that was the only time he was ever allowed out of his cell. So we would try to visit on the weekends so that he would at least get time out and know that we were there.
Yeah. I remember that like someone had been threatening him to fight him, and they both ended up in the box, and then they both have to be transferred to a new prison after they go into the box. And it wasn't clear, like, is this person going to be transferred to the same place that my brother is going to be transferred to? And I remember that not only him being in the box and worrying about his well-being from the people that were at that facility, but also then worrying once he got to the new facility, what it was going to be like there.
Right. Yeah. Again, that was a whole new, different procedure to learn, and he had to figure out where he was going. In some ways, I think he felt very safe there because that prison had individual cells. You were in your own cell when you were locked in, where the prior places he was double bunked. so that he always had a bunk mate. And then I guess you kind of worry, you know, who's the bunk mate? What are they like? Blah, blah, blah. He seemed to have found people that he could get along with, and I think in many ways helped him in his journey. Older gentlemen who almost in the way kind of slapped him in the back of the head saying, you know, hello, wise up. Don't you realize you're very lucky? You have a family that comes and takes care of you. You should kiss the ground your mother walks on. I have no family. Nobody comes to visit me. Nobody brings me a package. Nobody sends me letters. You really need to appreciate that. And I think that that helps him in many ways as well. Once he got over his initial resentment of everything that was going on and trying to find a way to see if we could have a new trial and all of that, and then coming to the realization that nothing was going to really change and having to accept that what is and move on. I know it was harder for you because this all came about when you were outside of the country. I know it was really difficult for you and hard to explain to you what was going on when you're not there.
Yeah, and you want to feel like you can make a difference in the trial, which I wasn't there for any part of the trial, and so you wonder, like, would it have been different if I had been there and trying to advocate for him, or, but I yep. guess I'll never know.
Yeah, that's pretty much it. You know, you don't know. It is what it is, and you know, like they say, hindsight is 20/20. You know, you come up with other ideas or thoughts. Maybe I should have done this. Maybe I should have done that. But you can't change what's done. So you have to move on. And that took a while, too, to get to that point. And to be open enough that when people talked or asked me, you know, when I was working about him. At first I would say, oh, everything's okay. And then after a while I said, you know what, if they're interested enough to ask, I'm just going to lay it out there. And that was my system of being able to vent and talk about different things that were happening. And I guess I didn't even really care if they were listening or not. I just had to verbally get it out, and then I was able to move on.
Did you feel like people ever treated you differently because you had a son in prison?
I don't think that they've treated me differently. I know it's come up in conversation and people are sort of like, you sort of get a little look for them like, oh, I wouldn't have expected that. Or sometimes you'll get, people will say, yeah, every family has something that they're dealing with or has something in their family that they're not, you know, exactly proud of. I don't know if proud is the right word, but something that could make them worry that people would treat them differently or think differently about them. And I know at one point I was contacted about possibly speaking with a more public type forum that possibly could be a TV program that I might be interviewed for. And I had spoken to the principal at my school because I wasn't sure, because I'm a teacher, a former teacher, I wasn't quite sure how that would go over with the school district that I worked for, you know, and so she checked that out with everyone else, and she came back to me and she said, well, how are you going to feel with other people in the community maybe knowing about this now, because not many people in our community really knew about it unless they knew our family, because it happened so much further away from home that many people really weren't even aware of what had occurred. And so she wanted me to be really sure that I was okay with that. And I was like, yeah, it is what it is. And if people don't like me because of it, then too bad. This is my child, and he's just as loved and valued as any of my other children.
You're listening to Prison Pipeline on KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM. We are celebrating Mother's Day by airing an interview with host Amy Johnson and her mother, about the effect the incarceration of Amy's brother has had on their mother.
What has helped you to get through some of the challenging times of having a son who's incarcerated?
Well, you know, I would definitely say my Miss Mothers, or Mothers of Incarcerated Sons Society, that website. And then before I found them, I had found New York State Inmate Families, which I found to be a godsend when your brother first went to state prison, in gathering information and knowing a little bit about what to expect and some of the regulations that they would post and get printed out, you know, so that you could find them online to find out what the regulations were before you got to the prison. And if they were saying directive, blah, 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 you could go and find that directive and see what it was. Actually, the New York State Department of Corrections and Community Supervision, I believe it's now called, has just started to put those on their website so people have more access to that information, and it's more public and it's not seemingly secret or that things get changed that you don't know about.
Yeah, and one thing with the directives, the things that I've seen online is that there's like one directive from the state maybe about clothing. But then each prison will have a different way that they interpret that directive and the types of restrictions they place on the clothing that visitors can wear, for instance.
Right. You know, it becomes very, very difficult. You know, you are in an environment where somebody else is in charge and you have to follow their rules, whether or not you think that they make sense. And you don't have any way to question the rule, because if you question the rule, that's sort of held against you.
Yeah, so you worry, like, I'd rather be able to visit than to be right about this. And so you kind of go along with some of what's, at least that's the stance I've sort of taken sometimes when I've visited. The first thing you mentioned that helped you get through challenging times was Mothers of Incarcerated Sons Society. So I was wondering if you would just say what that website is.
Okay, it's a website that's nationally, and it's called Mothers of Incarcerated Sons Society. It was started by a woman in, I believe, the state of Michigan, because she had no other experience with anyone else who was facing the same things as she was facing, and she thought that there should be a way, you know, for mothers to connect with other mothers who are going through this and help one another navigate some of the challenges that we face. So it became a kind of like a support group, but it also became a place to get information, where you could also become in contact with somebody else from your own state that maybe might be able to help you better than that. And it evolved to not just being sons, but it's also daughters, not just mothers, but it's also fathers. We have some fathers that belong. There is, we have some parental people who are actually like have sort of adopted or were foster parents for someone. We have a gal who has joined, who has taken under her wings this incarcerated individual who has no family. So she's kind of found this place to come to find information and to gather some support as people look at her and say, why would you choose to have a relationship with this person as not the wife, not the girlfriend, but just an adult that cares about another human being? You know, that's kind of, in a nutshell, some of the things. Moms wanted to send birthday cards to their sons. So there's now a monthly birthday list that's put out. So if your son would like to receive cards, you can have his name added to a list. And then all the moms who are willing to send out cards sign up as well, and a list is created so that we send cards are sent to the boys or the girls or the inmates. We've done that. It's not something that your brother really was interested in. He didn't care for that portion of the program. But I know that in the beginning when I was doing it, and inmates, I would get cards back from inmates or letters thanking me for taking the time to send them a birthday card or a Christmas card or a Halloween card. We also have someone who organizes cards for different celebrations or holidays.
What advice would you give to the friends or relatives of a parent of an inmate, to someone who is the mother of someone who's incarcerated?
I would say be supportive, listen, don't be like they're in prison, they're away, just, you don't need to see them, or why are you worried about them? Now, don't belittle their concerns. It's like a loss. It is a death in a sense. It's a death of the future that you thought was there for your child, and the worry of what this new future will be and how you're going to both navigate it or all navigate it. I would say the worst thing that, friends and family can do is to try to totally ignore that someone's in prison or incarcerated, that they brag about their wonderful children, almost as a way to say, well, my kids are really good, and, what happened to yours? And it may not be that they are intentionally doing that, but it sometimes can come away when you're in the beginning of this first stage and your emotions are very, very raw.
Hmm.
So to be a little bit sensitive about that, and see, is there something I can do? How about visiting? Are you able to get there? Do you need help to get there? Would you like someone to go with you?
Hmm.
Those kinds of things can also be very, very helpful.
And I guess one question that I didn't ask earlier that I think would be sort of interesting within the context of being a mother and having a family member in prison is the change of the traditions, the family traditions, that happens when when you have someone who is incarcerated. I mean, and for us, it meant like going, like you said, for Thanksgiving, instead of going to like our aunt and uncle's house and seeing all of our relatives, or same for Christmas, going and driving through the wilderness to upstate New York to go and visit.
Snowstorm.
Or a snowstorm, or a deer jumps in front of your car and the car gets totaled.
Exactly. Yeah. It changes things. For our family, we were able to, for many of the years, especially in the beginning, to be there for him for those holidays. And I don't know if that was simply just because that was me. I couldn't celebrate the holiday without him.
Mm.
I'm not quite sure, So spending Thanksgiving, really great, sitting at a long table with him on the other side and all of us on this side. And, what was interesting is I remember very vividly his saying, you know, everybody has to go and pick something out of the vending machine to eat, and the vending machine where food is like, really, is there anything even in there that any of us will eat or should eat? You know, there was bad enough that I was feeding it to him, but at least it was stuff that he liked. And he was very insistent that we each have something so we could have somewhat of a semblance of us all eating together a meal, even if it was junk food out of a vending machine.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that memory stays, you know, with me. I know there are other families who, the way they celebrate is they come, you know, a time, either a day before, a day after, or whatever, and at their house, they still set a table for their loved one who's not there, so that that person is sort of at the table with them, spirit.
You know,
it has changed our traditions, you know. Extended family is difficult to get together.
Is there anything else you wanted to share with our audience as we wrap up our phone call?
Just, you know, to be there for your child, to realize that no matter what they have done, society does not have a right to project that onto you. In most cases, these are, you know, in the case of your brother, he's an adult. He makes his own choices, you know, and each one of us through life has to make our own choices and accept whatever consequences come, whether they're good consequences or whether they're bad consequences. And the best we can do is try to help one another to live through them.
Thanks, and happy Mother's Day.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Prison Pipeline on KBOO Portland. I wanted to wish a happy Mother's Day to all the moms at Coffee Creek and to those out in the community because of the family sentencing alternative, which allows them to serve their sentences in the community. And happy belated Mother's Day to all mothers. Listen to this and previous Prison Pipeline programs at kboo.fm/prisonpipeline. Like Prison Pipeline on Facebook.
I wanted to thank my mom for speaking with me tonight for Prison Pipeline, and also to let you know the website for Mothers of Incarcerated Sons Society, the support group my mom mentioned, is mothersofinmates.org.
Thank you to our engineers, Danielle and Mike. Good night.